So, Priya, a lot in the news this week about ChatGPT, health and AI. Some people say taking over the diagnostics. The AI people tell us that it's not about that, it's only about help. What's your take on all this?
I'm very interested with the release of ChatGPT Health, and I know that a lot of people are already turning to it, and people can now sign up to request access for this service. I have a lot of, I guess, concerns and reluctance as a GP. I wonder how it's going to impact clinical practice.
Do you think it's going to do you out of a job?
I don't think do me out of a job, but I think people already rely on things like Google, and I think this may change the landscape yet again. It would be ignorant to think that this isn't going to change the game.
But it is commercial. You know, they're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts.
No, they're not. So there is money in it for them. And I just wonder what happens to people's data. How safe is it? Is it regulated like a medical device? And I guess to answer all of those questions, we have an expert, Professor Enrico Coiera, who's the director for the Centre of Health Informatics at Macquarie University. Welcome, Enrico.
Hi there.
I guess the key question is, how safe is it if people are putting in their health questions and their data into any AI service like ChatGPT Health?
Look, it's a really difficult question to answer because we know so little about these new products. People say, you know, years go by and nothing happens, and then a week goes by and years happen. And we've seen these products appear out of nowhere really in the last couple of years. So normally, if I'm using anything in healthcare, there's evidence behind it, research evidence. And what we find with all these new chat products, whether it's ChatGPT or Amazon or Google, is that there's no formal regulatory process they've gone through. So Australia's TGA doesn't say it's good or it's bad. And they don't necessarily publish enough data to give us confidence that they are safe. So if you use these products, you will be impressed by them. I mean, they are often very good, very accurate, but not always is the issue. And so in healthcare, we need to be not 85% correct. We want to be 99.99% correct.
Do we know where they get trained? I mean, we know that ChatGPT gets trained on the millions of books that have ever been written, you know, with enormous controversy. I mean, have they just ingested Harrison's textbook of medicine and Bailey's textbook of surgery? Or, you know, have they got access to medical records? Has the Mayo Clinic been trained? I mean, what do we know about how ChatGPT Health has been trained?
What we are told is that it's health specific. So it would have been trained on guidelines, journal articles, those websites you mentioned like Mayo, as well as presumably lots and lots of conversations about healthcare. So
maybe even the health report.
Possibly. But if you think about it, every week ChatGPT looks at something like 230 million queries that are just healthcare related. So that's a huge amount of information that presumably goes into the model also.
So they've said, OpenAI have said, Enrico, that ChatGPT Health won't use the data collected to train foundation models. But what does happen to the data that someone pops into this service? People upload their blood results, their images, information from their fitness app trackers. Where does it go? Is it safe?
What they say is that they guarantee that it's secure and private, which is fantastic. Secure means it's not going to get hacked. And private means that only the people you want to see it, see it.
But that's taken on good faith, isn't it?
It's all on good faith. And there are a lot of weasel words in there in the sense that there are lots of other uses they could put those data to. They could use it to on sell to a pharmaceutical company. They could use it to personalize products that you get advertised to you. There's no barrier to that. So usually what I say, and this is nothing to do with any specific product, is you need to be very clear about where the data are being kept. And I'm a strong believer that the data needs to be residing in Australia, subject to Australian laws. If the data is being held by OpenAI in the US, then US laws hold, which are very different in terms of protections.
So before we get to AI, what do we know, for example, in the good old days, like 3 weeks ago, the reliability of Dr. Google? Because there has been some research into that.
So Google is AI. It's been AI for a long time. It's just a different kind of AI. And it's never been clinical grade in the sense that it will always do pretty well. But Google works by giving you a collection of information that might be correct. So hopefully in the 5 or 10 documents you get, you might see what you want. What we're doing now is something quite different, which is synthesizing an answer out of all those documents. So it was the use model of Google that made it safe in a sense that you had to go and look at all those documents. Now we don't have that filter anymore.
So when the AI health service gives you an answer, Enrico, and I've never used it, I'm declaring that, if you plug in your symptoms and it gives you solutions or a diagnosis, does it give you references? Does it give you the stuff to look at to see potentially how reliable the information it's giving you is?
So that will depend on which company's product you're using, but usually they'll have links that you can click on. But the challenge is the person reading it in a position to be able to read that and understand it and to be rational about it? So if it's 2 a.m. and I'm panicked about a health symptom or sign, I may not be in a good situation to assess those links. Really what you want to do is to chat to a health professional to say whether or not you should be worried or not. So it's an artificial setting, really, where you're putting information into a computer. You're not engaging with others to help you problem solve.
Talking about settings, because there's so many overlaps here. So you've got nurse on call, doctor on call, the federal government's investing on GPs being available on telephone lines, and they're using algorithms which presumably have a bit of AI in them as well. And the assumption has been in the past that if you've got nurse on call, it actually unloads off emergency departments. But the early experience of that was, in fact, it increased demand on emergency departments because the risk adjustment on the algorithm that the nurses were using wasn't prepared to take a risk. And the idea is having doctors there is that doctors are better at risk adjusting and perhaps saving people unnecessary four-hour waits in casualty. Have we got any idea here whether these AI systems risk adjust?
No, we don't. And we don't even really know how they're built. So we know generally the technologies that go into them, but the so-called tweaks and guardrails and optimizations they put in are all proprietary. So it's all black box. All you can really do is look at their impact once they're in real-world use. And as I've said, there's scarce evidence about that. And that really is, for me, one of the concerns, which is it's moving so fast, well ahead of regulation, well ahead of legislation, well ahead of the evidence, that we don't really know this world we're bringing in. I'm optimistic in the sense that I think these technologies have great promise, but it's going very, very fast.
One of the things we spoke about just before you came on was the new system for a national record of prescriptions. Is there any sense that you could give permission to these AI systems to access your personal prescription record or your My Health record?
Yes, at the moment, there's no connection that's available, and they're still stitching up all the different data sources now to put them into My Health record. There's nothing stopping a future government allowing that to happen, and you would hope that if that did happen, then there will be strong protections.
And Rico, I just wondered, you mentioned before that currently these AI devices aren't regulated by the TGA. I'm assuming they're not considered medical devices at the moment. Do you think there's a point at which that will change as we start to see how they behave in the real world and the potential implications?
So the TGA has been very clear that if software participates in diagnosis or therapy recommendation, it is a medical device and it should be regulated. Although if you read on the ChatGPT health page, it says it's not providing advice. It still does provide that information. So you would probably argue that these are medical devices. It's what happened with Uber, really, where Uber came in early, where there was no regulation around that sort of service. There was old taxi services that were being competed with, and they just moved so fast that they evaded regulation. And my worry is that it's sort of an Uber move again, where they move in very quickly, own the territory to a point where we can't avoid not working with them and then allow them in terms of legislation.
What's the overlap with the clinical situation? A lot of GPs are using what are called AI scribes. They listen to the conversation. They take notes that are more comprehensive than the GP would, being very popular. But what's being thought of as an adjunct to that and probably undeveloped is AI systems, which then link to the other records that might have been had over the last 6 months, medical tests and pathology tests, and saying to the doctor, have you thought this might be pancreatic cancer, for example? What's the overlap here, if any?
It's very analogous. And again, the TGA, Australia's regulator, has been very clear that if the scribe system does that, it should be regulated. It is considered a medical device. And so there's a bit of to-ing and fro-ing at the moment where the people are trying to avoid that costly process. But I think the evidence is clear that the moment you start to provide advice or guidance, you need to be regulated.
Which, let's be honest, these devices do that. I have patients come in and tell me that ChatGPT told them to do this, this and this, and they've already implemented things and then they come and see me. So it does feel like they are giving quite a bit of advice to patients already. So let's see. Watch this space, I guess.
Exactly. It's just moving so fast, guys. Mm. What they say in Silicon Valley is move fast and break things. And the problem is things in healthcare are people.
Enrico, thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Professor Enrico Correa, who's director of the Center for Health Informatics at Macquarie University. And we've had a few emails.
We have had a few emails on this topic. And I think we need to acknowledge, Norman, and we didn't cover it in the chat with Enrico, that people are clearly turning to AI for reason. They have reasons to go there. And it might be that they cannot afford to go and see a health professional. Perhaps they are in a regional area. They've felt dismissed before. They've not felt heard and seen in a consult. So we have to acknowledge that there's reasons why people go here.
Or it's 3 o'clock in the morning and they don't want to wait for 4 hours in the emergency department.
That's right. And it's easier to go on your phone. But we did get lots of emails and people have said, so Duncan has said, I'm trying to be very measured in my responses and recognise this is not a substitute for medical advice.
Acer says, of course, like in all areas of life, this is subject to the quandary of ask the right question and get the right answer. That's absolutely right. Mm. It really depends on the question you ask.
Marika says it gave her a 3-step morning and 3-step evening routine for her psoriasis and says, after 6 weeks, my psoriasis around my eyelids disappeared. Also, my skin has never looked better.
Well done, Marika. Yeah. And the answer is, I get clear answers and I'm reassured that these symptoms are real and they're not just in my head. I'm no longer in the dark about why I've been referred for certain tests or the meaning of medical terms. I'm building up health literacy and can ask my GP or specialist more useful and relevant questions. It's interesting. I was listening to Life Matters on this topic with Tegan Taylor. And in fact, the representative of the Australian Medical Association argued that this was one of the benefits of AI in health, is that you had a more meaningful conversation with your GP and used the time with your GP more productively.
And there was actually a study done in 2024 which looked at how many people were using AI for health reasons. And in fact, people who are English as a second language, who don't speak English at home, these people were more likely to actually use AI instead. And I think for some people, it may actually help improve health literacy and perhaps navigate the medical world, which is a bonus. But as we've heard from Enrico, there are also a lot of potential risks here. And if Enrico is nervous, Norman, so am I.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're in an AI-free zone with the Health Report here on ABC Radio National.